Hey, welcome everyone to another podcast episode. Here at High Level, we call it the High Level Spotlight Sessions, where we bring in top industry leaders, in my opinion, that are doing pretty cool things in the world of marketing, sales, SaaS, you call it, you name it. We've got some experts that come into our world and our stage and share from their story. Gil Valeria, I've met him years ago. I feel like now in one of our inner circle groups. I want to say thank you to Joel Kaplan for that environment that he created. I met Gil there, and I remember, you know, Gil's story. I feel like I watched your story kind of develop from like 10, 25 grand a month to I think well over $500K a month by the time you sold your agency. I asked you to jump on a podcast and kind of share from it. So those of you that are watching, the topic that we're going to discuss is three ways to build sales channels that'll prep you for an agency exit. And as you watch this, results may vary. We're not making any financial promises of any kind. More than likely, you won't get any results out of implementing some of these things. But what we want to do is share from our own experience, share from what we've learned, you know, from the mistakes as well as the good things. But Gil, welcome in to our podcast, man. I appreciate you jumping on.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. And man, it's good to talk with you. And in addition to being in Joel's group, I saw you, I think it was 2 years ago, we saw each other in person at an Apex event in
Ryan Stuman. Yep.
Yeah,
Ryan Stuman in Dallas.
Yeah, oh, yeah, like right. Randomly, like I didn't know you're going to be there. And all of a sudden I turn around, I'm like, is that Paulson? Yeah. So, but yeah, man, it's been, you know, obviously I've had a lot of interaction with High Level, yourself and Kaplan's group over the years. So it's been an exciting journey and I got to meet some cool people.
Yeah. So I know your personal story, but I think it's time that we let the world of High Level know of your story. Help us understand how you got started. I mean, I know some of it and some of the stories you shared about your family and all kinds of stuff, but help us understand those that don't know you. What's your story in business? How did you get started in entrepreneurship as our first dialogue here?
Yeah. I mean, I think like anybody, like early on, I had feelings like, you know, I want to do this. I want to do this. I always had a feeling I was going to branch out and do my own thing, but I was an employee for a very long time and I got stuck in the corporate world for longer than I would like. And eventually I made a decision. I'm passionate about fitness. So I made a decision. I'm going to go open fitness centers, right? I actually did it while I had a full-time job, went and opened my fitness centers. And fast forward that, I ended up scaling up to three fitness centers, brick and mortar, opened them up in the Chicago suburbs or Illinois, and COVID hit, right? COVID hit in 2020. That was right around the time I opened my third one. And so I ran into all kinds of challenges, and a lot of them related to sales and marketing. So I was seeking out different options and trying to figure out marketing and how can I get more people into my gym. And I joined a couple different marketing agencies and I eventually started figuring it out on my own. And actually, when COVID, so in Illinois, gyms were shut down for 3 months. And when COVID shut my gyms down, I didn't have anything else to do. So rather than go hire a marketing agency, I found my way to Go High Level's website. And I said, you know, I'm like, this is the software all these marketers are using, right? So I signed up, I started working with somebody from GHL, and I started building my own internal marketing programs for my gyms. And once we got opened up, I had a ton of success. Like I was doing well with the agencies that I was working with, but I started doing really well for myself. And more importantly than that, I really enjoyed it. Like what's funny and ironic is, you know, I loved fitness and I loved business. So I was like, oh, that's a great marriage. I'll just open businesses. And what I immediately found was that I actually loved marketing a lot more than I loved running a gym. And I enjoyed it. And I was learning in all the different aspects. And even being like a sales and marketing guy, I enjoyed the automation and the back end and the operations and campaigns and generating leads, just kind of everything. I immediately took a liking to it. So that started working for my gyms and, you know, the light bulb went off and I was like, well, I'm a part of a franchise. I know a lot of other gym owners. Let me see if I can help them and sell this service to them. And fast forward a bit later, as a franchise, you kind of have the handcuffs on you on selling to other franchisees. So before I got in all kind of legal trouble or anything like that, I decided to make a minor pivot. So I was working with gym owners. And there was a chiropractor near one of my gyms. That's health and wellness. I felt like it was still a very relevant space. So I started working with him. We got even better results than we were getting from my gyms. And I started building it up from there. And something that kind of turned into like a little side project, you know, because I was stressed out when COVID happened and my gyms were shut down. Really, like, I started seeing the opportunity in it, and I started realizing that, that there's an opportunity to build a real business here, not just like do something on the side. And I ended up looking to sell and exit my gyms. That took some time, but I sold the gyms, went all in on the marketing agency. And then it was just an absolutely wild ride from there. As you mentioned, you know, I joined Kaplan's group because I didn't know the first thing about building a marketing agency. So I kind of got my foundation in that group, and, you know, I built it, quickly. You know, I went from like the story, and Joel knows, he shared it in his community, is when I joined his program, I was doing $4,000 a month in revenue. And that was like October of 2020. And by October 2020, yeah, I'm making sure I'm not getting the years incorrect. And by by March of 2021, we had crossed the $100,000 monthly revenue milestone. And then, you know, from there, it was like another 13 to 16 months. We ended up hitting 250, 350, 400, and ended up breaking 500. So, you know, I'm grateful. It was amazing. And I actually got a message from a fellow agency owner that was a friend of mine the other day. So I want to throw this out there because you made a good point when you opened up, like, the things that I'll share doesn't mean everybody's going to go out there and make 500K, right? There's a lot of luck, circumstances, and certain things that kind of have to align to scale that quickly. But, you know, he sent me a message, and he's like the sweetest, kindest guy ever. And he just sent me a message, and he's like, I'm not going to lie, I'm a little jealous and envious of how quick you just built this agency, scaled it, and then sold it, you know? And he's like, was it really that easy? And, you know, my short answer to him was like, no, it wasn't that easy. There was years of entrepreneurial failure behind that, between my gyms and other businesses. There was frustration. There was years of working in the corporate world to develop my sales, you know, skills and experience, and really taking too long to leave the corporate world before I actually made the dive into being an entrepreneur, a full-time entrepreneur. So, you know, I just always like put this disclaimer out there because I know how hard entrepreneurship is, and I know how frustrating it could be. And the last thing I want to do is add a message out there that makes people feel inadequate, right? Oh, Gil went from this number to this number in this short amount of time. And I think as entrepreneurs, we can look at that and feel like, oh, we're doing something wrong, or we're not enough, or maybe these other people are just better than me. That's almost never the case. There's almost always a backstory, something else that has happened that you don't know about, you know? So it's like, on the surface, it looks like one thing, but it's not always like that. It's hard for everybody. Everybody goes through challenges and, you know, has stressful nights and all the same things. So including
absolutely.
Me.
Yeah. Absolutely. And again, you know, when we shared this story, even before I had reached out to jump on a call with you about the podcast, I was like, well, I remember the different milestones you were hitting in different coaching programs that we were all part of. I remember you coming into those Q&A calls and leadership calls and accountability calls where you're like, guys, I have this problem. I have this much XYZ clients. I have this happening. I remember like watching when you say 2020 to 2023 or whatever, like I remember seeing the trenches of what you were going through. And one thing I know about you is like, you're very elite in sales and prospecting. Like you're relentless, and that's not a common thing among marketers. So I think your results are unique to you, but it's very like I wasn't surprised at all when I think Joel put out, I think you had a call with them. There was like a coaching call where you had came in and shared, hey, things that you've learned from hitting almost, you know, 500K or whatever a month and kind of figuring out ways to sustain it. And obviously, if you're watching this, these results are abnormally unusual. Like this is not, you know, an assumption that you should make that you will hit any of these things. But let's talk about how you got to those lanes, like how you got to those milestones. So like three ways to build sales channels. Let's talk about the first thing. I'm thinking building a world of inbound leads. I mean, we hear the terms of setting and closing appointments. And then as we get further into it, let's talk about prepping the agency for an exit, because you did go through an exit from what I understand. So let's talk about that and a little later. But let's talk about the fundamental basis of how do we get an agency to a world of inbound leads. So what are your thoughts on that? How did you get started on kind of creating a predictable wheelhouse?
Yeah. And this is like important and a very good topic. I'm gonna lean a little bit more into the philosophical thoughts around sales and marketing and lead generation, because, you know, we could talk tactics all day, but there's a million, you know, even, you know, contractors or white label companies or partners out there that can set up email outreach, can even do your paid advertising, could set up cold DMs, you know, every channel. You know, Alex Hormozi just released a book that told everybody everything, right? It's all there. Yet why is not 100% of marketing agencies successful after consuming that book, right? And my response to that, my answer to that is, just because you understand and know the strategies doesn't mean you're actually doing what's needed and implementing them in your business. And in a marketing agency or in any business, there's a lot of distractions, right? And what I mean is, like, I had this very simple example that I'll share with you that I used when having a conversation with a group at one point. It's like, you can find yourself for hours on end building a logo and designing your website and creating automations and building out your snapshot and go high level and all these things, right? But if you're not driving in new prospects, if you're not driving in revenue, if you're not getting on sales calls when you're initially building your agency, all of that is for nothing, right? Like, it's a true statement. It doesn't mean that there's not importance around those things. There is, right? There's a time and a place to really put your focus into those. But without first building a company and building a business that has consistent, predictable revenue, it's your website doesn't matter. Your logo doesn't matter, right? So first and foremost, I think a reason that I had a lot of success is because I was not naturally great at sales, but I spent so many years in it that it became my most prominent skill or the thing that I'm best at, right? So then when I did create a marketing agency, it was natural to me. And that was the first thing that I wanted to do. I wanted to do marketing. I wanted to do sales, right? So while everybody is, or a lot of other agency owners are saying, you know, how long until I can hire a closer to replace me in sales? I was just thinking, how can I sign more people in and then hire people on the back end that can support them at the highest level? But it was a very long time before I even thought of removing myself from the sales process. So I think there's two things. I think, yes, I had the skills and experience going in to be very good at sales, but I also just naturally enjoyed it. So over somebody who's trying to avoid it, I gravitated towards it. So the first, like, conceptual idea that I'll share is you have to truly be all in and committed to your marketing and sales process, whatever that may be. And when you make a decision on how you're going to generate leads, like, Paulson, you and I know, right? You can run paid ads, you can do cold email, you can do DMs, you can, you know, go after large partnerships, and all of them work, right? All of those work. What I would say is you first have to choose which avenue you're going to use. There's pros and cons, and there's risk and reward to each of them. My choice was paid ads. And once you make a decision that that's where you're going to generate your leads, you have to go truly all in. You have to understand it. You have to perfect it, and you have to monitor it and understand your KPIs and all of those things. So, like, with me, I didn't do cold email for a very long time, right? I didn't even add it in. I didn't do much DMs. I didn't do SEO. I didn't do anything else. I was running paid ads. I was understanding them at the highest level. And I was spending all of my time getting on those sales calls and converting as many new clients as I possibly could. And then once I really truly had paid ads figured out in a sense to where it was predictable and consistent, then I had some back end people on my team that I was able to teach and delegate some of that responsibility to. And then and only then did I tell myself that I had the permission to go add another channel in, whether it be cold email or whatever it may be. So my advice would be, whatever way you choose to generate your leads, right? If you need the actual tactical advice on how to do it, there's a million resources out there, but you have to choose that one thing. You have to commit to it. You have to eliminate the other distractions that come inside your business, like everything we mentioned, like website and all these other things. And until you have a significant amount of revenue and resources coming in, you don't get to stray away from that, right? And until you figure it out fully and really understand it, don't add another channel in. Having five channels running all at once that are mediocre and half-assed is not going to result in success, right? So choose the one thing, understand it, do it really well, perfect it, spend the time and energy on it, and then move on to the next thing. So what
you're saying, Gil, is basically instead of doing cold email and cold calling, Facebook ads, events and influencers and stages and all the stuff all at once, if you're beginning, just starting out, once you have an offer kind of verified, maybe you have a beta test or some kind of case study that's built that you have some proof in the pudding of the offer, what you're saying is go all in on one channel until it's stable and to a point where it's moving on its own before you move into another thing.
Yeah, because they all work. There's agencies built around each individual channel, right? Where the majority of their revenue, that their majority of their acquisition is coming from any one of the channels you just mentioned, right? So in my opinion, the only difference is the CEO and the agency being able to monetize consistently that single channel because they're really, really good at it, right? So pick your thing, get really, really good at it. It's the same concept that I try to share and apply to niching down, right? Or adding additional. It's like a lot of agency owners come in thinking, if I just open up my TAM and I work with HVAC and medical and chiropractors and gyms and all of these things, I'm going to have more of an opportunity pool to sell to. Therefore, I'll get more deals. I'll have more revenue. It's not the truth, right? The truth is, and everybody knows this now, it's common knowledge, right? The truth is when you select a niche, you have the ability to be a specialist and not a generalist, right? So you can be really good at that one thing. You can fulfill well, you can sell well, you can articulate your value proposition, and you can acquire clients really well, right? It's actually the opposite. So don't start with a large TAM. Once you get big and you have resources and you got 40 people behind you, now you have the opportunity and the privilege to say, we're doing chiropractic, we're going to add in med spas, we're going to add in fitness, we're going to add in physical therapy, whatever, right? That's when I believe like is a time to expand TAM. So I apply that same concept to my acquisition channels. Paid ads alone can drive a ton of revenue. You can run a multi-million dollar agency with paid ads alone. So figure that channel out if that's the one you so choose. Perfect it, get really good at it, be hyper-focused on what's going on there. Then once you figure it out, delegate it and then go add in cold email or then go add in speaking on stages or attending events in person or whatever other opportunities are out there. I'll add this one caveat to all of it. I think a huge opportunity that's missed in the agency space out of all the different acquisition channels is large franchise and partnerships, right? It doesn't only have to be franchise, but large partnerships. I have two very close people that I interact with regularly that run agencies, both very successful. And the one thing the three of us all had in common, we all acquired very large partners or franchises. I don't think it's a necessity. There's companies out there like Gym Launch that just had massive amounts of individual clients. But I do think it gives you stability and consistency and the ability to fulfill at a high level for one group of people so that you can go and deal with the volatility that comes behind paid ads and everything else, right? It gives you that like security on the back end that I have these 80 clients or 90 clients or whatever that are probably going to always be there, that are going to churn at a lower percentage, which makes me feel like my business is not going to explode at any moment. Therefore, I could spend time figuring out this other harder acquisition channel. And you know, not to get too long-winded here, but this is an important thing to understand. A lot of agency owners that I've conversed with believe that going after the whale, going after the large franchise or the large coaching group, it's such a big mountain to climb, right? It's like, how am I going to land this account with 100 offices, right? The truth is, those people that make the decision have less noise in their inboxes, their phone, whatever it may be, because it's the individual, like let's use a gym for example. The large franchise owner operator is getting less messages from marketing agencies than the individual. The individual is inundated with emails, with phones, with you know, paid ads, all of that. So they're overload. They have all these different decisions, you know, people that they can choose from. If you can get past the gatekeeper in these large organizations, it's actually less competitive. Isn't that wild? It's less competitive. In RFP processes that I've been a part of in large groups, it's only like three people, right? I'm bidding and competing for hundreds of individual offices against only two to three other people. Versus if I go to one individual office or one gym or one chiropractor, there's like 50 agencies they've heard of, right? They see a different ad every single day with a different face. So doesn't mean that you eliminate the individuals. Go after those. Get the ones and twos. They're easier and quicker, shorter sales process. But if you're really truly vested and you're all in on the long-term success of an agency, go after the whales. And if and when you land one, it completely changes your business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, Gil, one of the big differences, what I've seen that agencies don't realize, is everyone has a sense of confidence that's very, very, like, you can see it in somebody's energy, right? Like the sense of confidence in their fulfillment and their offers, right? What you feel about your offers is very clearly evident on your sales calls. And that's what drives these relationships. Like, if I know but that my offer is amazing and it's better than everybody else's, I'm going to feel really confident going after a whale, versus if I'm like mixing, you know, results and I don't have, you know, I just have a C plus grade or a B plus report card on how my agency performs for clients. Like, I'm not going to feel that confident going after these big aggressive players, or even build up multiple sales channels, right? So can you share how you develop that confidence around your offers, especially when it comes to building out sales channels and inbound leads?
Yeah. Same thing. I'll start with like a philosophical answer to that. And then, you know, I could share some tactical things that we implemented and did that I think are very helpful. But if you know, as a CEO, you have to build culture in any business, right? An agency, whatever, you have to build a culture, right? And the culture really does typically stem from the CEO. So if you're building culture in your business, right? And for example, if your culture is that we are going to reinvest in the business, we're going to do our best, we're going to do everything we possibly can to fulfill at the highest level for our clients, we are going to care not only for our employees, but we're going to truly, genuinely care about our customers, right? And we know that, like, we know that if we're investing in resources for our business, there is not going to be any trick or magic bullet or wand that a competing agency is going to have over us, right? Whether it be AI nurture integration, or whether it be some type of snapshot, or whether it be a certain ad copy or way to structure your ads. I was always confident because I was actually investing the time and energy, both in a sense with money, with the people I was hiring, and with the time that we were investing in our fulfillment process. I was always confident that there was no other chiropractic marketing agency out there that was doing something magical that we weren't doing, right? They might've been making big promises on their guarantees or their paid ads, but on the back end, I knew in my heart, they were not doing anything that we weren't doing. And then the second part of that was, I know that I genuinely cared about every single client that we ever acquired, right? So when you have those two things combined, when you're actually doing the work on the back end, you're reinvesting in your business, and you really care, when a prospect shows up to, let's say, a sales call, I almost felt it wasn't just like conviction or confidence. I almost felt an obligation, like a sense of responsibility to convince this client to work with me, because if they don't, I don't know who the next person they're going to have a conversation with, right? I don't know what their fulfillment looks like. So I really believed in that. And then just like a more overarching thought that I always had was, Go High Level combined with paid advertising for like brick and mortar businesses like I worked with is amazing. It's so, you know, if you went back 20 years and introduced this to a business, they would be absolutely blown away, right? You have to go back in time and think about the marketing channels that brick and mortar businesses, and really all of them, but let's talk brick and mortar. You have to think about the options that they had. Like, what did they have? Billboards, mailers, physically going out and doing screenings or, you know, gym events or whatever in person, yeah. Right? You can't track that. You don't know, you know, what the turnout's going to be. I know people have spent thousands of dollars on billboards, right? Local businesses. And I say, hey, what did you get from this? Well, I don't know. My face is on a billboard, right? So while there's a lot of scrutiny around paid advertising and paid marketing and lead generation, if this is, you know, the business that you're in, not just SaaS alone, I felt very confident that every brick and mortar business should be doing this. I'm like, this is, you know, we're addicted to these things. We're on these things all the time. We're always scrolling, right? So it's like, if I could sit in front of a brick and mortar business owner, a chiropractor, a gym or whatever, and say, I can put your ad in front of hundreds of thousands of people locally on this phone, and I care about your results, and I'm going to try the hardest I can, and I've invested all the resources in building the best possible business I can. Like, how could you not have conviction when you're having conversations with them, right? So you're not always going to get, like, if there's agency owners out there listening, you're not always going to get the best results for your clients. And when you run paid ads, there's going to be big expectations with those clients coming in. But if you really care, if you're really truly reinvesting time, energy, resources into your business, and if you believe in the channels and the way that you're advertising for your clients, you have an obligation and a duty to convince those people to work with you. And then you have a, you know, responsibility to work your ass off to get them the result. Doesn't mean they're always going to get the result, but the ones that don't, I slept well at night knowing there was nothing else that could be done for them, you know?
I love that. And as we go in deeper into this conversation, what we're doing is kind of mapping out three ways to build sales channels that preps your agency for like an exit. Because that's one thing that Gil has done that a lot of agency owners has not done. So the second thing is, let's talk about the entrepreneur. Like, how do you create an assembly line that's worth your time and effort? Because, you know, in reality, agency CEO burnout is like pretty common, you know, and sometimes they know it, sometimes they don't. You know, you find a lot of us going into like these volatile mental, like, you know, cycles that sometimes you're encouraged, sometimes you're not. But how did you build an assembly line that's worth your time and effort that provided some, you know, stability for yourself as the entrepreneur or the CEO?
Yeah. I mean, the first part of that is the last two things we talked about. You have to have revenue and deals and acquisition and sales and money coming in, because that's the number one cause of stress around entrepreneurs, right? If deals are flying in and if money is racking up every single month, and if your revenue is growing, I guarantee your stress levels are going to be lower. Yeah. It doesn't mean they're going to be gone or not non-existent, but they're going to be lower. So you have to first build, you know, my phrase was, you have to first build a sales organization before you even build a marketing company, right? You have to fulfill, you have to meet your obligations to your clients, contractual guarantees and all that, but you have to have a sales operation or you're not going to have money coming in. Once you've done that, I went through this transition phase, and I couldn't tell you exactly when it was, but there, I wore a lot of hats in the agency initially. And then even as we started to grow, right? And it's what is needed in the business, right? You have to do that. That's part of building any business. You got to be able to do everything, right? But there does come a time where you have to make a transition, and where you as a CEO and owner of the business, getting into client accounts and doing media buying or getting on client check-in calls no longer makes sense, right? So I personally had to go through this phase of where I truly transitioned into a real leader and not just like somebody who had a couple employees that was involved in everything. And it's hard because, like, the first thing is I felt a sense of guilt when I would go ask one of my team members to do something. I would feel guilty, like I'm being lazy and I'm not doing it. And then I also knew in the back of my head, they weren't going to do it as well as me. Right. So, you know, a good example of this is even with sales. When I hired my first two sales guys, I ended up firing them both, right? The sales, the closing percentage was at 70%. I was closing at 70%, right? I bring these two guys in, and these guys are very skilled, very experienced, committed. There was nothing wrong with them, right? But it dropped all the way down to 20%, right? There was a lot of dynamics and variables that were different. So we dropped down to 20%, and I immediately said, I'm running paid ads. This is expensive. You guys got to go, man. I got rid of them and I got back on sales calls. This is going to fix everything, right? And then I woke up one morning and I realized that there's zero way to scale a business as a CEO if you're taking all the sales calls. So I brought, and just to prove myself wrong, I brought the same two guys back. And then I'm bringing the same two guys back. I didn't blame it on them. I blamed it on myself, right? So I took accountability here. I brought them back and I said, I had conversations with them. And I remember saying, I am going to support you. I'm going to do everything I can. I'm going to be here as a resource. We're going to get on calls, whatever you need from me, right? But I'm not going to let you fail. I'm not going to let you fail. We're going to figure it out, right? And that was more of a commitment to myself than them, right? That was a commitment to, I'm going to scale this business, and it's going to have to be people that allow me to scale the business. So that was like kind of a transitional phase in my entrepreneurial journey where I feel like I really turned into a true CEO or a leader. And, you know, then not only was I, you know, I read a book, Buy Back Your Time too, not that long ago, which is just a phenomenal book. If you're listening,
Dan Martell or somebody
Dan Martell. Else? Yeah. Dan Martell. Yeah. Just phenomenal book, man. I love it. But, that I feel like everything that I'm trying to explain here could be explained far more articulate in that book. And you could also apply tactical lessons from that book based on where you are in your, you know, revenue, kind of journey or whatever. So the first part is I learned how to be a true leader. I learned how to, you know, accept that things were not always going to be perfect and empower people. I learned how to, you know, let them fail, right? Also, having children is a good kind of exercise with this. You got to let like your kids fail. I let my team fail. I let them make mistakes. I let them learn. And what I realized is that over a period of time, you know, I kind of showed up to the agency one day and I went, okay, now I have this many people. And collectively, all together, they are far better than I could ever be as an individual, right? Yeah. So it was like, I was looking at these individual cases, like this one guy can't ever be as good as me in sales, or this one person can't ever be as good at client success or media buying, right? But when I empowered all them, I hired people, I believed in them, I truly delegated to them, I let them fail a bit, and I just was there to support and be a resource to them. You know, all of a sudden over time with a culture shift, I came into my agency one day and I went, wow, I have a lot of talented people that are running a business that are good at what they do. And overall, they're doing it better than I could ever do if it was me trying to wear all these hats. Right. And then we just kind of, and then, you know, we just kind of built on that. So, you know, so I'll say this before I get too far in here. If you are one of the agencies out there that's starting out, you're at $5,000, $10,000, or even $15,000, like stop listening now and go back and listen to the first two things. Sell, grow your revenue, do the right things, build your business, you know, everything that we shared earlier, and don't get distracted, right? If you're at a point where you're starting to build a team, you have leaders and you're thinking about what is my enterprise value? What's my exit strategy? And how can I sell this thing for as many millions as possible in the near future? Then what I would say is you first obviously have to build a team of leaders and you have to look. Two of the most important things that buyers looked at when we were going through due diligence was, number one, they looked at, you know, just my EBITDA, right? How much profit was the agency bringing in on a yearly basis and how consistent was it? And the second thing was, how involved was I, right? So they're thinking, if I purchase this business, right? And it depends on who your buyer is, but they're thinking, if I purchase this business, and this guy goes away after a period of time, what is the likelihood that this operation could fall apart, right? What's the risk that it could fall apart? So the more that you can secure that by having leaders that have all different responsibilities and are really good at what they do and have employees that are going to stay with the business, you know, maybe a couple depart if you depart, that's going to actually increase the enterprise value of your business, right? So, and not to jump around here, but what Buy Back Your Time helped me understand something that I already knew, that I had to delegate, I had to have leaders, I had to rely on people. It helped me prioritize what things I should be working on and what things I shouldn't. Because it was just kind of like, I know I got to give this away because I can't handle it anymore, right? But that book allowed me to be like, here's the most high value levers that I can pull as a CEO. And everything else that falls below my hourly rate, which the book helped me determine, goes to somebody else, right? And that also helped me with hiring too. So when things were below my hourly rate and I was responsible for them and there was nobody else in the business that could do those things, that was an indication that I needed to hire somebody. So those are the two most important things. If I could go back and prep my agency for sale, I would have gotten many more millions. There's things like there's tactical things that you have to think about. The more structured and more organized your backend is as far as SOPs, the more value that your business will have because they're going to want to look into that and have clear visibility. And here's where you can leverage Go High Level. And we started to do this transition. We took everything that we had in Google Drives and we built it into membership courses in Go High Level. So we had all these resources and documents and Zoom recordings and all this stuff that was scattered, you know, for client success and for media buying and for fulfillment. And it was scattered throughout a Google Drive. And we transitioned that into the Go High Level membership courses and started to organize it. So not only did that increase our enterprise value for somebody looking to buy the agency, it also and this is part of it, it also made it better when we were hiring people, right? We were hiring people, we put them in their membership course, we train them, we'd get them up to speed quicker. They wouldn't need so much one-to-one time with a random, a random leader on the team. So those are all some of the boxes that, you have to check if you're looking to build like the enterprise value in the business. Consistency is obviously very important. So consistent revenue or EBITDA over a period of time is that's how they're going to value your business. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, I love that. So I think as an entrepreneur, I think the first mistake you make is build the business around you as the person, right? And then you realize, oh man, I can't scale myself so much. Even if I brought in like a duplicate version of myself, there's only so much that person can do because I'm still pretty involved. And then you realize, oh, I've got to step into becoming this person, right? So like, I know you and I have talked about it in the past. There's that 10,000 a month entrepreneur versus the 100,000 a month entrepreneur versus the $500,000 guy. Those are three different individuals with the same name.
Yeah.
They have different characteristics. Those three hang out with different types of people. Can you share those changes you went through as an entrepreneur, whether it's stress management, your time with family, the way you interact with your kids? Like, help us understand the different milestones you went through, because I think that's one of the key of, you know, the entrepreneur itself, because the entrepreneur is the problem, not the business often, right? In why it doesn't grow as fast as it does. So help us understand those milestones that you might have went through.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love this. And I think I fall a bit on the extreme side around this. Naturally, this is going to happen organically. Part of it's going to happen just now. If you're an entrepreneur and you're building a business, lessons and experience is going to help you become, you're going to change, right? You're going to learn, right? But if you're intentional with it, you can gain more ground a lot quicker, right? My team at points, and even my family, like, would think I'm crazy for the extremes that I went through around, you know, things that didn't seem relevant to the business, as far as like, you know, I used to love drinking. I love drinking on the weekend. I don't have anything wrong with bad habits. But what I started to do is eliminate or minimize all of these habits that took away from my energy, because I realized my energy was relevant to the growth in the business. So that's like one example, right? I started taking, I would disconnect the two. I would say, if I work hard Monday through Friday, Monday through Saturday, and I'm doing the right things and I'm learning and I'm all in on the business, what I decide to do on a Saturday night, have drinks, go with my friend, enjoy myself, that they don't impact each other, right? But I started to realize and admit that they did impact each other, right? And I'm not talking about even extremes in drinking, but I'm talking about even just like letting go a little bit, I would notice my energy wouldn't be the same, right? And then the longer periods I went where I had control over those things, the more energy, the more clarity that I would have, and the better that I would operate in the business. Not only that, the better I would show up as a human being, a leader, a boss, a husband, a wife, whatever, a husband, a father, right? Like, as a CEO of a business, you're not just telling people what to do, man. You're developing relationships with your employees, right? So the better you can engage with those people, the more that you could show that you care and have really deep conversations with them, the more committed they're going to be to the business.
Well, the better culture you build as
better culture, like the more committed the energy, they're going to, yeah, absolutely, right? So there was things like that. You know, it started out eliminating bad habits. Then it started out, you know, I'm very committed to like human optimization. I do all kind of, anybody who's follows me on social media knows I do all kind of, from cold plunge to red light to sauna, yeah, to sleeping, to all of those things. And those things, you know, part of them are for my health and part of them are for my longevity, but I'm a committed entrepreneur at heart before anything and everything. And I want to be, you know, I want to be a great father. I want to be a great husband, and I want to be a great entrepreneur. Those are the most important things that I prioritize in my life. So it's not just about how I feel or aesthetically how I look or longevity for me. It's about, you know, people always say, you know, I know you've heard this, Paulson, where people are like, you do all this stuff, right, to like improve your health, you get hit by a bus tomorrow, or you could randomly get cancer, you know, without controlling it. And I go, yeah, you're right. Right. But that's not the only reason. I'm not doing it to live to 150. I'll take that if it's an impact of doing it. I want to be the best entrepreneur that I can possibly be. And if I don't have clarity in my cognition, if I don't have energy in the way that I show up, if I'm not able to focus on the task at hand and what needs to be done, there's no way I could be the best version of myself, because unfortunately I was not gifted with the highest IQ or all these, you know, all these other things. So I had to work, I have to work hard at it, you know, and that's all part of it with me.
It's about being present in the moment too, right? Like I would go out to dinner with my wife once in a while, and she will know when I'm not present, even if I'm talking to her. She'd be like, honey, is everything okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm dealing with this big thing with business that I don't want to bring on to our date night. But she knows that I'm dealing with this thing, right? So my, like, even other people will pick up energies of when you're not present. And same thing applies with your team. Same thing applies with your culture. And those milestones we talked about, there's different requirements of presence that is needed from the entrepreneur, the leader, right? Mm-hmm. But I think you're one of the hardest working people I've ever met. From what I understand from all the stories, years of following you. And I think that's just innately your nature. Like, you're not gonna, you know, it's like, what, hell or high water, I'm gonna die trying. That's your mentality at full 100%. And is that something you've always had, like growing up? Is that like, you know, or is that like an entrepreneurial thing? You just go all in on what you have on focus.
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, I'll just say thank you, because that compliment means a lot more to me than somebody telling me, oh, you're talented, or you're just naturally a great salesperson, because it takes effort to do those things. And I know the effort I put in. So thank you.
Sure.
I do believe that there, at least with me, I can only speak from my experience. I do believe that most entrepreneurs, and for me, there was something there. There was always something there. I think that it took a lot of experience and a lot of maturity and a lot of intention and, you know, presence, what you're talking about, you know, what you were just saying. You know, I work with a coach, and 90% of what we talk about is intention, right? Like, you can be a hardworking entrepreneur, but when you're with your wife, you have to be intentional about spending that time with her, or you have to be intentional about telling her, I need 10 minutes to handle this thing, and then I promise you'll have my full attention. So I do think part of it was there, but I do think it was developed over time. And, you know, we're all a bit of products of our environment. And I think that I've had experiences in life that have shaped who I am. And, you know, some people feel I'm extreme in the way that my philosophy around entrepreneurship and around business, but I feel very blessed. I feel very grateful for the opportunities that I've been given to build a business and build and help people and empower people and, you know, serve clients and all of these things. And I just feel a moral obligation that while I'm here and with the time that I have to do the most that I possibly can with it. So, you know, when I say wild things like, you know, I'm not going to drink, I'm not going to play video games, I'm not going to waste a second on any of this goofy stuff because I'm all in over here, that's just me. And I am a bit extreme. And, you know, I put a post up earlier today, I got some slack for it. But like, if people enjoy golfing, if you enjoy being with your friends, if you enjoy video games, I'm not knocking you, right? I'm just saying, if you understand what you want out of life, and you really, really love something, and you want to see how far you can take it, then I've made a decision that anything that isn't contributing to that ultimate vision that I have, I don't have time for it, right? Maybe I will at some point. So, you know, to answer your question, I think part of it was always in me, but I do think part of it is I built and kind of forged this person who I turned into over time. And it feels really good when you get clear on what you want and then you can go after it, you know? And I'm just, again, man, I'm grateful. I'm grateful to talk to you. I'm grateful to interact with Joel. Yeah. I'm grateful to have a business, you know, it's.
Yeah. And what's funny is, like, when you're the one who has the discipline and you're like that Kobe mentality guy at all things, you tend to somehow attract people like that. And friendships that I have in entrepreneurship are people that are absolutely cutthroat of what they do. And there's no other choice. I mean, it's either 100% or 0%. There's nothing in between. And that's the way it is. And I love that, because that's what's going to drive you forward, is who you surround yourself with. So as we kind of close out this conversation, help us understand how all this translated to building and developing your enterprise value as an agency. You went through an exit. Help us understand. I don't know if that was ever planned and it just happened, but like, help us understand what that journey was like. I'm sure it was stressful and confusing and unclear, but it did give you what you ultimately wanted. Help us understand that whole journey.
Yeah, I mean, you know, here's why agency owners shouldn't run from sales. The ability to articulate yourself, show value, and negotiate will pay off in more times than you can ever imagine, right? And that's just something that's always come natural to me, and I'm good at it and I enjoy it. There are multiplier windows that a broker or anybody will tell you is reasonable for an agency. I'll just tell you that I got way more than what's in those windows. And I also believe a lot more agency owners can get way more. So it depends on how well you can negotiate, what leverage you have, what value you can bring to that specific buyer, what leverage they have, right? I'm not talking about a win-lose. I'm talking about win-win situations. So, you know, first of all, refine, develop your negotiation, your sales skills, and the way you articulate yourself, and you'll find ways to sell your agency for more. The way that my agency ended up selling was out of like a horrible situation. I can't get into all the details on it, but sure. I'll just tell you, we went through in 2023, early 2023, we went through one of the most horrific things I ever experienced in the agency. Pretty much we dealt with a hack. I could share that much. And it was at a time when it was happening to everybody, right? And we were a victim of that. And we had to fight back through it. And other things happened while we were battling back through it. But I had no intention of selling my business at all. And once that happened, I started thinking about having an exit strategy, right? It was at moments, if I'm being very honest and transparent, at moments, it was like, I need to get out of this. Like it was like a fearful type energy. And then once I fought my way through it and I came to my senses and I showed up and I got through that, it turned into strategic energy. And I thought, okay, nobody wants to sell their business from a fearful place. You'll get the floor, you'll get wiped out, right? But you need to be strategic. And I thought to myself, I don't know if it's going to be a year from now, 2 years or 5 years from now, but I need to start understanding what I'm doing, how I'm protecting myself, and when the right moment is. You know, it's like trading stocks or crypto. Like you have to be strategic and understand what's your exit strategy, right? Is it forever, 20 years? Or like, are we trying to get out at the top of the bull run in crypto, right? So I started thinking about those things, and an opportunity came up to have a conversation with a private equity company. Had a conversation with them. They started engaging. They made a formal offer. And, you know, this is public knowledge at this point now. My minority partner, who had been with me kind of since the beginning, he jumped in and said, no, I want to take over this business. He's actually a chiropractor, great friend of mine, business partner. He helped me build the company. He ended up exiting his chiropractic practice. He ended up buying the majority of the agency. I ended up, you know, getting a good amount because of the way the deal negotiation went. He ended up overtaking a great agency that he was familiar with huge growth potential. So I guess, you know, the lesson that I learned from that, number one, is almost every horrible scenario, most people this happens with, but almost every horrible scenario I've ever been through in life and business, something always good comes out of it. So if you're going through a challenging time, not to turn this into a motivational speech, if you're going through something challenging, try to slow down, take a breath, and figure out what it's teaching you. And if you don't know now, I guarantee in retrospect, you'll figure it out. But in addition to that, what I learned when that happened, that horrible incident, is that I wasn't thinking about it and I wasn't prepared. If I could give you a revenue number that you should start at least thinking about this, I would say between 75 to 100,000 a month is where you should start at least thinking about this, because there are things that you can structure as far, you know, we talked about it today, large partnerships, looking at your EBITDA closely, removing yourself, right? Organizing your SOPs and your backend and your operations and your training and your systems, right? Even going out and trying to get an IP, which is something a lot of agencies don't think about. But these are things that can take years to do the right way. So if you're at that revenue number, you can start taking those steps now and know what your end game is. Like I have ownership in two agencies now. I don't run them, but I have two CEOs that I communicate with. And both of them, I asked, what's your exit plan? You know, what do you want? And they didn't know, right? So like we sat down and we figured that out. And then once they kind of said, oh, this is it, it was like, well, why? why do you want to do that? Why, what's next? Right. And we really got, like, I really got to a point with them where I understand what they want to accomplish. And then now it's like, okay, cool. We could do this. Now we just have to have a plan to do it. Right. So that was my story, how it happened. And that would be my advice to anybody that's like up there about 75, 100, like think about these things.
I love that. So now how does that impact the team? Like, there's a culture that's built where you're like the leader and you're like the resource that they can all go to. Like, how does that culture get, you know, kind of realigned?
Yeah. In my specific case, it was probably the least painful it possibly could be for them, because this is somebody they already knew, were familiar with, had a relationship with, that transitioned right into the business. He's also just a phenomenal guy. He cares, he's passionate. So it was like, there might've been a moment of doubt. And when he jumped in all in, I think they quickly realized like, he's got it. The deal structure can help with this though. And most buyers are going to require this type of thing, right? Where there is a transitional period, you know, I'm sure, you know, there is a transitional period where you're phasing one in and you're phasing one out and you're working together collaboratively. So let's say that private equity company would have been the buyer of my agency. It wouldn't have been like Gil's gone after 90 days and they show up. There obviously would have been a transition phase where I supported them, their integration into the business, introduced them, let them build relationships as I removed myself. But more importantly than all that, than everything that I just said, if you built your agency the right way, if you've empowered true leaders, if you have good people in the business, and if you delegated all of the responsibilities that are, you know, not tied to a CEO, the vision, the big levers to pull, then they actually don't miss you as much as you think. Like that was something I told my wife. I was like, it was like a couple months had gone by and I'm like, man, they're not even reaching out. They're not even, and they're crushing it too. They're like closing deals and they're building the business and they're making moves, and they hadn't reached out to me very often. And, you know, part of me was like, kind of like upset, like, man, they don't even need me. And then part of me was really, really proud of what I'd built and what they were doing. And I think that's the most successful way to exit your agency. Like, they don't need you anymore, right? They're just, they got it figured out at that point.
That's pretty funny, actually. But yeah, in reality, that's the best thing you can do for the person that's coming in, plus the people that are involved. So Gil, we talked about three ways to build in, you know, sales channels that preps someone for an agency exit. We talked about building a world of inbound leads. We talked about leveling up as an entrepreneur and creating an assembly line that's worth your time. We also talked about developing like enterprise value as an agency. Why do you think agencies often struggle and fail then? Because it feels like strategy is never the problem. Offers are not the problem. Ads are not the problem. It's obviously the entrepreneur. But what exactly do you feel like is the problem with agency owners in typical fashion of why they don't grow? They're stuck in a certain plateau or whatever. Like, what are your thoughts?
The barrier to entry is low, right? I built gyms. It cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars of my own money to invest to build those gyms. Not everybody can figure that out, make that work, make moves to make that happen. Anybody can take $5,000-$10,000 and start an agency. That's a good thing. That is a benefit. In fact, I read a study today that like the number two business in the United States that's failing are gyms. And the primary reason is because of large capital investment initially. That makes the agency space a very lucrative business, a very good business model because of the low capital investment overhead that you need to start it out. However, that allows people that are not truly ready to run this business, jump in and start running the business. It allows them to close a couple deals. So I think you said it, right? It's the entrepreneur, right? The reason for my overnight success or quick success from an outsider's perspective is because I already had the foundation. I already had the failures. I already made the mistakes. I already had the sleepless nights. I already had the years of experience. I already had the sales fortitude for my career, you know, in my business, all those things. So I took that foundation and I brought it to the agency space. I took it very serious. I learned the fundamentals being in Kaplan's group. And boom, it took off, right? And I told Joel this in a recent interview. That is why I think a lot fail. It's hard, but every business is hard. You're gonna run into challenges, and someone, probably Hermosi or someone, used this example. Like, there's always going to be challenges, right? As you level up as an entrepreneur and as a person, like, you're going to be able to beat that level. And then you're just going to get to the next level. And now you have to beat that level. And if you get stuck at a certain level and you can't get past it, it's what you said earlier, Paulson. You're still the $10,000 a month entrepreneur that hasn't evolved to be the $50,000 a month entrepreneur. And you're never going to get past that level until you do. And the somewhat scary thing is there's no time frame that tells you, okay, it's not like 6 months of service, you go from the $10,000 to the $50,000 entrepreneur. It's the experience, the way that you can learn the lesson, the way that you can be intentional, right? The way that you can apply yourself. There's all these other variables, right? So some people can be stuck at a certain level to a point that takes so long that they'd rather quit than feel the pain anymore, right? And some people that have experienced it or find ways to figure it out, just hit that level and know, okay, this is just me not being good enough. And now I have to figure it out. And I want to add one thing to that, because one of the most important things in my evolutionary process as a person and as an entrepreneur is there's a lot of people on social media that are genuine and give genuine advice, but there's a lot of people that, excuse my language, are full of shit, right? And just say things, right? And if we got to beep that out, that's fine. But there's a lot of people that just say things, right? And the crazy part is a lot of those people believe it themselves. There were times at which I would be saying things and I would believe it. And then I would think about it and go, am I really that person? Do I really have the right to tell this person, here's the things you need to do if I'm not actually doing those things, right? Same thing in marriage, same thing as a father, right? I think one of the biggest realizations that I've had, and this is not that long ago, recently, is that it doesn't matter what you or what anybody thinks about me, right? It doesn't matter the perception that I put on social media. What matters the most as an entrepreneur and having success is, are you truly, deeply the person that you say you are, right? So I have big goals on what I want to do next. I don't think I'm the person right now that can accomplish the goals that I have. And I could sit there and tell people that I am, and they might believe me. You might believe me. Everybody might believe me. But I know in my own heart, and I know myself, that I have to go truly become that person. I have to learn the lessons. I have to understand. I have to really put the work in order to accomplish the goal that I want to accomplish. So if you're stuck at 10,000, if you're stuck at 50,000, if you're stuck at 100, or if you're stuck at 10 million, I don't care. And you're not progressing towards where you want to be, you have to really do the internal work, truly do it. You know, disconnect, do whatever's needed, and not just say it and not just believe, you know, think, oh, this is where I am, right?
I love it. So final thoughts, and speak to two different types of people, if you don't mind, Gil. Speak to the guy or a gal that started this whole marketing space business maybe less than 6 months ago. They're in the early trenches trying to prove out and build out some case studies. That's maybe where they are. And also speak to the guys and gals that have a team. They're crushing it. They've got hundreds of clients, but they're not happy. They're just kind of stuck in the weeds, or they're not a true leader or whatever. Speak to both of these types of people, because I think there's a lot of value there for someone like you.
Yeah. I obviously like going high level, no pun intended. I like philosophical advice. I know there's tactical things that I could give them, but I like going there. So what I would say to the person starting out is, or at the, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 marks, right? If you're an entrepreneur and this is what you truly want out of your life, there's no other option for you to find happiness, to find purpose, right? To find those things. Because if you quit and you go get a job, or you start over time and time again, right? You're never going to pass that level that we talked about. It's not the business model. It's not the vehicle you're in. It's you as a person being able to get past that level. I made a decision. You know, I had a career where I made good money, good six figures a year, very easy. I was fulfilled. I was taken care of, made money, family was happy, right? But I wasn't pursuing my purpose. So I felt there was something missing there, right? So I quit this great job where I was making money to take no paycheck to pursue something that I wasn't sure about, right? If that's who you are, if you're an entrepreneur at heart, you're never going to be happy. You're never going to be fulfilled if you quit, you give up, and you go do something else. So it was easy for me to make a decision that I will bang my head against the wall for 5 years, for 10 years, for 20 years, as long as it takes to figure out a way to break through, because there's no other way I'm going to achieve my goal. There's no other way I'm going to find my purpose or my passion, right? I think that I see so many talented people that are early in the stages, that are learning, that are going through the struggle. They quit and they become a closer. They quit and they go apply for a job. They quit and they pivot to SaaS. They quit and they pivot to, you know, whatever different type of business model. If that is truly, that's okay. And there's nothing wrong with being an employee. Like, I want to be clear about that. And being an entrepreneur is not for everybody, man. I worked a lot of hours for less than minimum wage. So warning, right? But if you know in your heart, and if you made a decision that like, this is what you need to do to make yourself happy in life, you don't have any other decision. There's no other choice. You just have to go forward. You have to get better. You have to learn the lessons, and you have to do whatever it takes for as long as it takes. And when you do end up in the position that I am in now, there is a sense of satisfaction that I wish I could share with everybody, if I'm being honest with you, right? There's a long time. There's a lot of frustration there. There's stress. I got gray hairs and stuff that probably wouldn't be there if I wasn't an entrepreneur. But there is a sense of accomplishment and satisfaction when you get to a certain level. You know, you quickly like put it on the shelf and then you go chase the next venture and chase the next goal. But if you're at that level, that'd be my advice. If you quit, you're just going to either start over or you're going to end up, the worst thing you possibly could do is end up at 70 years old and regret that you got off the path because you were scared or because you were frustrated or because you were tired, right? And on the flip side of that, the person that's had some success, 100 grand, 150 grand, that might be stuck or might be, you know, kind of, you know, maybe not feeling passionate about their agency or their business anymore. I think for those people, gratitude is extremely important, right? I have an agency that I'm partnered with now. There's a CEO. He's a very smart guy. He's very good. And I sensed that he felt that, right? He felt like a little bit like, oh, why am I doing this? I don't know that I want to do this anymore, because it's hard, right? And those moments happen. But agency owners don't realize how hard it is to break those barriers, that 100K, that 150K. So if you've gotten there, you do have to take a step back and be grateful, because if you were yourself at $10,000 a month and you were able to visualize and see yourself now at $150,000 a month, you would pray daily that you were going to get to that point. But it's crazy how quick we get there and then we just forget that how hard it was and how much we wanted that, right? So it's like, first, be grateful. Stop, smell the roses, understand the position you're in. Not everybody gets to build a business that does that much revenue, right? Be grateful for it. But take the lessons that we talked about here today, right? Like, if you're not getting to the next level, just accept it. I accept that my next goal, I'm not good enough right now for it. I know that, right? I've met people that are in the industry that I'm pursuing, and these people are light years ahead of me. It's not even, we're in different worlds, right? That's okay. I'm okay with that. But I know I'm going to do with what's within my control to bridge the gap between them, right? And I'm gonna truly behind closed doors put the time and put the energy in, and I'm gonna do all the things I can to have the highest energy and be healthy and feel good. So I have, you know, I'm the best version of myself to go into that. So hope they.
I love that. Absolutely, yeah. Gil. It was such an honor to have you on the podcast, and I'm grateful on that note to have met you and some of the people in our communities. We have a lot of people in common that are in our circles of entrepreneurship. So I appreciate them for that as well. But if you're watching this podcast and you don't have High Level for whatever reason, jump into our Spotlight Session 30-day trial. It's in the description somewhere. But ultimately, I hope you got something out of this. Even if you're not a High Level family member, if you're watching this on any of our channels or, you know, YouTube, I'll tell you one thing. Don't do entrepreneurship by yourself. It's typically not a good thing. Your family will suffer for it. your friends, your children, everybody will essentially feel the pressure that you're feeling because you typically will distribute out that energy. So it's always best to partner up with people. It's always best to surround yourself with the top five, you know, Kobe Bryants that you respect. And I know that's what Gil has done in the past, had mentors, you know, tons of groups that he's part of. I met him in, you know, different events that we're all investing into ourselves and our own skill set. No matter where you are in entrepreneurship, I think you should continue investing into it. Gil, any final words or final thoughts as we kind of close out?
Yeah, two things that I just like to share when we wrap. One, I'd just like to say for you, Paulson, man, you are an absolute asset to High Level. Like your reach, you know, people that I have interacted with, it's not just me that like has been in groups with you. Everybody knows you, everybody respects you, everybody loves to interact with you. You give value to people, they give value back to you. So I know you know this, and I know High Level, you know, your business there, you guys all know it, but you're an absolute asset, and your reach goes pretty far, man. So shout out to you. The second thing is, I know this is like a phrase that people use now, but I really don't at this point have anything to sell to anybody, but I do want to put this out there. So I have, since exiting my agency, I have started Limitless Capital, which is my own private equity firm. And I am investing in businesses that, you know, I believe in, CEOs that I believe in, and I'm bringing my experience, my knowledge to step in and help them scale. So I don't have a course to sell anybody. I don't have a service that I can provide. I don't have any private coaching that I could sell you. I'm not pitching anything to anybody here, but if you listen to this and you're an entrepreneur and, you know, we have some income qualifications and experience qualifications, if you feel there's potential synergy between you and between myself, what I am looking for is, you know, driven, ambitious entrepreneurs that are looking to partner with like-minded people where we can collaborate and take our business to the next level. So if that's you and you're out there and you want more information, I have a free group where I just give a bunch of free stuff away so I can network and connect with people. And I'm also on Facebook, and my yeah. business is Limitless Capital. So I'd love to connect with people.
Yeah. And I think when you first started the group, I was like one of the first 10 or 15 people that joined the group. And I've seen you live stream in there several times. I remember being at an airport or getting ready to jump on a flight. I was listening to one of your live streams. I think there's a lot of value in what you're bringing to the table because you're a practitioner of building this type of business model. And you came from another whole world of brick and mortar, small business type of thing. And now you're going into private equity. So I think, you know, being on the ride with you is like a total privilege for anybody that would jump into this mix. But Gil, thanks for saying yes to me, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And just part of that is what we talked about today. The exit is such a hard part of the business model. That also is my responsibility and duty to my portfolio companies. I'm the one out here negotiating an exit for them as part of a portfolio, which, you know, is something else. Like attaching your agency onto a larger portfolio allows for much larger multipliers and buyers. So there is my, you know, offer to people out there if they're interested, but I really don't have anything to sell anybody. So Paulson, man, thank you so much.
For sure. For sure. Bye for now, everybody. Thanks for watching another episode of our podcast called The High Level Spotlight Sessions.